and welcome back today for episode 27 of the Resilience Institute podcast. And today I'm trying something new. I'm doing a podcast mini series. And I thought of this because I love listening to podcasts when I digest information and I try to learn, because it means I can listen to and understand the concepts without feeling like I have to get the whole thing done in one sitting. And whilst my episodes aren't particularly long as it is, for the bigger topics, I think a mini series will allow me to keep things short and sweet for you guys without sacrificing the level of content. So be sure to let me know what you think of this, and we'll see how it goes. So this series, we're going to go over training intensity, something I get a ridiculous amount of questions on. And it's how hard you train in the gym. So that's intensity. And we're going to split it up into three parts. So the first part, we're going to introduce the concept of failure and what failure is, and then introduce training intensity, and then also talk a little bit about how muscle is built and how strength is made, so you have an understanding of how we need to train to get the results that we desire. Then in part two, we will discuss how to then train and kind of what we need to do for our goals. And then in part three, we'll go over some of the strategies that can help us know and gauge whether we're either training too softly, too hard, or as my nonna would say, when her pasta is just right and ready to eat, al dente. So click that follow button so you get a notification when each episode is released. And while you're there for 5 seconds, even maybe leave a quick 5-star review to help your boy out. And for everyone who already has done that, you are legends. I appreciate you guys and girls. So thank you. And if you think of someone that you know who's always stiff and sore or is never sore and never making progress, tell them to follow along with us. So let's get stuck in. So as you'd see on social media, if you follow training pages or even just follow me, everyone has an opinion on the failure debate. Like, the problem is, it's so common in people who have no knowledge or qualifications or proper experience training or rehabbing people. And it's usually that 58-year-old in the gym on the verge of bilateral knee, hip, and shoulder replacements telling you, like, back in my day, we just trained hard and blah, blah, blah. And while I agree that a lot of people do need to train harder and actually have a go in the gym, you can't really teach that. Like, nothing I can say or do will help them. Like, you can't just muster up energy and motivation in people to do this stuff. Yes, you can give them like brief inspiration, but ultimately long term, they have to want to do it themselves. They have to love it and be motivated themselves. And as I always say to my clients, like, when they feel bad for getting overexcited or training too hard, it's always easier to turn the wheels of a car in motion than one that is sitting still. And if you're listening to this right now, you are that car in motion. And don't get me wrong, there are times where training to failure can be useful, and I'll show you those times. I'll talk about those as well, but as a whole, we want to avoid it for the majority of the time. Like, I can almost guarantee the niggles you get and the pain and the aches you get, and the reason you're always feeling so stiff and sore is because you're smashing yourself to failure every day thinking that that's how the tough, hardworking, big, strong people train. But genuinely, it couldn't be furthest from the truth. It's so common for people to think that they need to push extremely hard if they want to make gains in the gym. Like, you see motivational videos on YouTube and TikTok and Instagram. Like, they have the hype music and people are pushing to failure, and then they throw up in the bin and then they crawl down the steps after a big leg session. Like, I understand every one of these is done with great intention to get more people having a go in the gym, like I mentioned before. But the problem is, unintentionally, they're glorifying pushing to the max and busting their body every session. And then if you're not, they make you feel like you're a failure and you're weak and or you're not working hard. So, and again, most of these people as well, they're most likely on performance-enhancing drugs where they can afford to do this because they recover twice as quickly and than your average person, or it's their job and they don't have full-time jobs that give them stress. They don't have money stress. They don't have other stresses in their life. Like, that's their one focus. So they have the capacity to recover. Or for those freaks out there, they have both. They're on performance-enhancing drugs and they're doing it for their job. When we talk about training intensity and knowing how hard to train and stuff. Like, it's actually quite an art. And it is true, like when you see people say work smarter, not harder, it is true. And don't take me saying this as, oh, training will be easy. It should definitely still be challenging. But we need to look at what failure is before we can even start to have the conversation. So failure. Failure is where a person is unable to meet and overcome the demands of an exercise. So that causes an involuntary set endpoint. So they were unable to control it or do more. So basically, you couldn't keep going even if you had a gun to your head. Like, your muscles physically incapable of moving the way you want or moving the weight again. And we have two different types of this. So we have absolute and then we have technical. And absolute is where even if you change or alter or slightly break your technique, you physically can't move the weight anymore. And technical, that's where you break your technique, so your form is altered and that counts as failure, but you haven't fully gone to failure. So technical can be a bit of a gray area, because if we say that there can't be any breakdown of technique and you can't alter it one tiny bit, you may not actually take your muscles close enough to failure and you risk losing potential stimulus and adaptations and gains. So the best way I believe and that I coach is a mix of both. So a bit of technique change or form breakdown is okay, but as soon as you start doing funky things that make you look like you've made up a new exercise or you're doing something completely different, then you've probably gone way too far and you're not really properly training to failure. So we know what failure is, but what does the research say about going to failure or stopping early before it? And this is my favorite part. This is the best part about talking about this, because research has consistently shown that you will get the same strength and hypertrophy gains or adaptations when training around 2 to 3 to 4 reps in reserve as you will going to complete failure. Let me say that again. You will get the same adaptations and the same gains when training around 2 to 4 or so reps in reserve as you will going to complete failure. The same adaptations, the same gains. And this, when I talk about it, this is why everyone is fully missing the point of not training to failure, because they don't understand. It's not as much about the short-term results of, oh, am I going to get stronger or weaker or recover? It's about the long-term consistency, and the difference in recovery and stress on the body and the body's joints is vastly different when you go to failure or you stop before. And this is why people never progress properly in their programs consistently, or they hit plateaus. Like, so another example is they did a study in, I think it was 2020, maybe 2021, where they compared bench press recovery 24 hours post a session, right? They were comparing strength before and after a bench press session. And one group, they completed at 2 reps in reserve or an 8 RPE. So they left about 2 reps in the tank. And the other group, you guessed that they went to full failure. And the 2 reps in reserve group, within 24 hours, they were only 0.5% stronger. And you're probably thinking, like, what the fuck? Like, that's nothing. Like, I've just done all this thing and I'm only 0.5% stronger. But we need to remember strength isn't instantaneous and it's only 24 hours, right? The full failure group were 7-something% weaker. Remember? The same adaptations and the same gains from the same amount of reps and sets, same weight, everything. Like, let me say one more time. The same adaptations and the same gains. But within 24 hours, the full failure group was 7-something% weaker and the 2 reps in reserve group were only 0.5% stronger within 24 hours. So it's not a huge gain, but they got the same adaptations and the same gains. I'm not going to say that again because I think I've said about 35 times. But they were stronger within 24 hours. So it means their body can actually, it isn't now in this massive recovery debt. So instead of being stronger the next day with the same gains, they did those 2 extra reps or so and now were weaker. And I'm not demonizing training to failure. Like, we'll talk about this in the next episode when we can, about when it can be beneficial and it's not quote unquote harmful. Like, it does have its place. But I really want to illustrate that it isn't necessary to train to failure. You don't have to train to failure to get results. And if anything, it can actually make you weaker and stuff your recovery up. Like, it's not the 4 week, the 10 week, the 12 week programs that where you get your results. It's being consistent year in, year out. Like, it takes years to build decent muscle and strength when you're natural. Years. And to train for years, you need to avoid injury, you need to not be stiff and sore all the time, you can't be having those niggles and aches always holding you back or stopping you training. Like, and I've gone, like, you need to train smart, but then once we know how to train smart, we can also train hard. And that's where the two will combine and we'll start to talk about it. And now that we've gone over what failure is, I've gone over this in depth before, but we'll quickly take a look at how muscle is actually built at a physiological level, and then we can actually link failure and muscle growth together and wrap this first part up. So there are three pathways. We have muscle tension mechanical tension. We then have metabolic stress and muscle damage. So muscle damage, we get those micro tears that we rebuild, and this is what everyone typically assumes is how you grow muscle, but it's actually not as important as we once thought. We then have metabolic stress, and as the name implies, that's where there is metabolic stress and metabolite accumulation after an exercise bout in response to low energy. So think about the feeling you get when your legs get heavy when you're running, or the pump you get when you're training. And last but not least, we have mechanical tension. So mechanical tension is any force that is trying to stretch your muscles apart, and then tension is created in the muscles. So it's now slowly becoming understood as the main driver of muscle growth, and it's the one we're going to focus on when we talk about going to failure. So let me explain. To maximize mechanical tension, that's any force trying to stretch your muscles apart, and ultimately that resulting growth from each of your sets, you need to be able to recruit as many muscle fibers as possible during that set. Because if you aren't recruiting all of the muscle fibers, they can't all be stimulated for adaptation and growth. So basically, if you don't go anywhere near failure, you're only going to stimulate a low amount of fibers, so not your entire muscle, and that will not only reduce the size you put on, but the early fibers, like type 1, you'll hear about in a second, they aren't designed to hypertrophy as much as type 2, and type 2 fibers, they get recruited last when you get closer to failure and as the muscle's demand increases. So muscle fibers. A muscle is made up of different types of muscle fiber, right? We have type 1 muscle fibers, and these are the slow twitch fibers. They're the ones where it's low force, but they could contract repeatedly forever. Like those boys, they can just keep going. And then we have type 2 fibers. These are your fast twitch, where they can produce high force, but they fatigue really easily. We have type 2A and type 2X, if you want to dive deeper about it on your own, but we don't really need to go there today. So type 1, weaker, but can go on forever, and type 2, stronger and hypertrophy more, but they run out of gas quickly. So the brain is a smart tool. It wants to conserve energy and not use more than it needs. So the brain will only use a certain percentage of the total muscle fibers in any given muscle at any given time to complete a task. So when we try to voluntarily contract our muscles to move something or lift weights, it depends on how much force we need to produce as to how many muscle fibers the brain will recruit. So if we recruited 100% of our muscle fibers all the time, imagine what would happen if you went to pick up something like a pen or a phone or anything with 100% muscle recruitment all the time. Shit would be flying everywhere. And as a side note, this is also why you see people doing superhuman feats when adrenaline is high in life-threatening situations. The brain, it's true when people say the brain can recruit a lot more than it does, and it has this almost reserve power that people like to get all excited about. But basically, the brain, when it's adrenaline's high and there's a life-threatening situation, the brain will recruit whatever it can at all costs, as it doesn't care about energy sparing for the future or saving itself. It just wants to live or save the person you're trying to save. And that's why you'll see the person, after they do this superhuman feat, they'll usually be injured after, because their joints and their muscles aren't meant to handle that much force or lift something so heavy, because they're not used to it, but the adrenaline takes over. And I'm going on a bit of a tangent here, but you can see how your brain can actively choose how many muscle fibers it recruits. So we know it depends on how much force we need to produce as to what fibers our body will recruit. So type 1 will be recruited first, right? Like I said, low force, but they can do everything all day and just keep going. These are your everyday activities: walking, picking up objects, moving your limbs, scratching your butt, whatever. But as the force required or the total fatigue increases and all of the type 1 muscle fibers are recruited, your brain will then begin to recruit the type 2A fibers. And then if more force is still required or there is more fatigue, the type 2X fibers. So you can see how the brain works. And this is what we call motor unit recruitment. And this is where there is sequential activation, so there's a sequence of the same and then additional motor units. So think type 1 to type 2A to type 2X. As force required increases or fatigue increases during voluntary muscle contractions. So think you try to lift something fast or something that is really heavy, or fatigue increases, the body will recruit more muscle fibers to make the job easier and accomplish the task. And this is where we can kind of sum it all up, because if we want to use and stimulate as many muscle fibers as possible for increasing our muscle mass, we need to give the body a reason to call upon those extra fibers. So remember, this is why we lift heavy weights and we push towards failure, because it makes our muscles tired and it increases the force required, and then the brain has to call upon a higher percentage of the muscle fibers. And like we said before, it can either be that the force increases, so lifting heavier weights, or fatigue increases. And this is where an important bit of research came out that showed you can actually make the same amount of muscle mass using 5 reps or all the way up to 30 reps. Because remember, it's not dependent on one thing. It can either be that you require a large amount of force production, or you increase fatigue and you increase motor unit recruitment and mechanical tension that way. And obviously, there's pros and cons to both that we'll talk about in the next part. And so, yeah, so moving on from that, in theory, going to failure would lead to more maximal motor unit recruitment and mechanical tension, right? Like when we talk about this, you're probably thinking, well, if you're saying that we're going to go to failure, it should equal more growth, but it's actually not quite. Not only is training to complete failure taxing and draining on the body because it requires a lot of effort and energy and it puts a lot of demand on the joints, but this is also where the research comes in again, that it shows that you basically stimulate the same amount of motor units when pushing to a 7 or 8 RPE, so those 2 to 4 reps or so in reserve, as you do going to complete failure. And that's where you can now see why those extra few reps aren't quite necessary. It's that same example with the bench press. So you stimulate roughly the same amount of muscle fibers, but like I said, it's more taxing and more draining if you go to complete failure. Not only does your brain and nervous system have to recruit more muscle fibers, and that's taxing, especially at high load, it also creates excessive muscle damage, one of the 3 ways we build muscle, and it extends recovery time between sessions. So we want to stimulate as many muscle fibers as possible, but be as recovered as possible as soon as possible. And if we go to failure, that resulting muscle damage and that nervous system taxing can easily carry over into your next workouts for the week. And as a result, it can hinder your future for performance in those workouts, and it leads to poor performance. So, and if this is done over a long period of time with inadequate recovery, so sleep, nutrition, hydration, rest, stress management and stuff, it can actually lead to that state of overtraining. And although it's much rarer than people think, this state then results in a reduction of your anabolic hormones and an environment of stress that's detrimental to creating muscle tissue and performing at a peak level. So it turns out, as you can see, there is a sweet spot for recruiting maximum muscle fibers while still not pushing your body to breaking point. So training smarter and harder. So stick around for part 2. The next two will be a little bit shorter now that we have the basics and the fundamentals out of the way, and I'll give some recommendations on how to actually train and what we need to do for our goals. So until then, stay safe and tell someone you love them.